The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Broadcasting veteran Derek Pearson.
When you find something that moves them, that makes them smile, celebrate it. That's your task. That's your superpower.
Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman.
Rifles a pass. It was tipped. It's picked off by Foreman. He's at the 15, 10, 5. He'll score!
On 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome into Hour 2 of Old School, brought to you by the Mercado, Certified Piedmontese Beef, every type of meat, not just beef, every type of cut. Big thanks to our man MVP Mike, who works out there, for bringing in some beef jerky for us. Also left EPA care package. Get your own today. Perfect grilling weather today. Haven't checked the forecast for this weekend. Hopefully it's more of the same, but here's the thing. It's all sunshine and rainbows for me because there's basketball on this weekend. For those of you that don't know, I am probably, you know, outside of Strick, the college basketball junkie here at the Ticket. And so that's what we're going to focus on for the next 20 minutes or so before we get you out to the women's basketball Final Four. Game one tonight will be NC State. Yeah, the Wolfpack made it both the men's and women's side against number one overall seed South Carolina. Just dominant Don Staley's team has been. So it's 3-seed NC State versus 1-seed South Carolina. And it's another 3-1 matchup on the other side in the nightcap tonight. It's UConn versus Iowa, Paige Beckers versus Caitlin Clark, Gina Wariema versus Lisa Bluter. Should be in store for a couple good matchups tonight. You'll hear them right here on 93.7 The Ticket. The winners, you'll hear again on Sunday for the championship game. Let's take a look at the men's side, though. UConn opens up as an 11.5-point favorite over Alabama. First of all, what great bulletin board material for Alabama. Second of all, I don't even think that's intended as a slap in the face. I don't know if I would have set the line that high if I were a shark in Vegas. Clearly, they have their rankings and their metrics and their numbers that are telling them that this is where it has to be. This is where it's settled, and we'll see which side the money comes in on. But I don't even think the 11.5 points is a slap in the face to Bama. I think that's just a testament to how incredibly good UConn has been. Not just this year, but really dating back to last year. So the Huskies have won 10 straight games in the NCAA tournament and got to win 6 to win a national championship. So obviously last year, they got the first 6 of those wins, all by double digits. And then the next 4 wins, okay, round of 64, 32, Sweet 16, Elite 8 for UConn, have also been by double digits. That's 10 straight double-digit wins in the NCAA tournament. Supposedly against the toughest tests that this team is supposed to face all year. That can be up for debate. We can talk through that if you want, 402-464-5685. What's been more difficult, UConn's NCAA tournament runs or the Big East Conference grind? Because obviously UConn, you know, plays Marquette, plays Creighton. St. John's was better. Butler challenged for an NCAA tournament berth this year. Seton Hall, we'll get to in a minute about Seton Hall, just won the NIT. Xavier's been pretty good. Not as much this year, another NIT team. But the Big East, for my money, is the best or the second best basketball conference in America. No lower than second. Top three ain't three. How about that, as the kids might say. So there's an argument to be made that UConn's path through the Big East and winning that conference is tougher than its path through the NCAA tournament. I mean, yeah, Georgetown and DePaul exist. I would guess they're better than the 16 seed that UConn has faced. And they weren't a one last year, but the 16 they faced this year. But who's to say? If you want to have that debate, you sure can. I'm happy to have it. 402-464-5685. But yeah, UConn opens up as an 11.5-point favorite against Alabama. Over-under for that game is set at 161.5, which honestly seems about right to me. This is a game that, okay, so take off the 11.5-point spread, gets you to 150. So yeah, they're talking, yeah, 80-something to 70-something. That seems about right. That seems about fair. I mentioned a thread on the block, my show that I do with Eric Strickland, 2-4, in case you're just now tuning in. We'd love to have you for the previous couple hours here, weekdays. But no escalators. It's a UConn fan account that I got shown a while back of just some of the best Twitter accounts to follow in college basketball. No escalators is hilarious. I want to give whoever that is their flowers, but it does some this person does some insightful work as well, showing that tempo is supposed to be Alabama's friend, but playing at the rate Alabama does, UConn actually has better numbers than Alabama. They get better shots, they take better shots, and more importantly, they make more shots than even Alabama does. So if tempo and jacking up a lot of threes is supposed to be Alabama's skeleton key and way to win this matchup, the numbers would tell you UConn is more than happy to play that style. I don't think UConn is quite as comfortable in the knockdown, dragout defensive fights, but we also saw UConn run away in one of those games. Now, I'm not saying flee, you know, turn tail and run. I'm saying UConn went on a run and just buried San Diego State in an avalanche in a national championship rematch earlier in this tournament. So UConn just has been a wagon, has been an unstoppable force, but the way that Creighton beat them, granted it was at home in Omaha, was a barrage of threes. That's really the only way anyone's beaten UConn this year, is getting hot from three. Alabama has shown the tendency to do that. So if we talk about styles make fights, even if UConn is able to, you know, quote unquote, keep pace with Alabama, you know, play Alabama's game the way they want to, UConn might even be better suited for it, the numbers might tell you. But UConn has shown the ability to win in a variety of ways. 22-26 asks this question, which leads us into the next game, on the men's side, at least. Matt and Lincoln. Thanks, Matt. When was the last time two schools had both men's and women's teams in the Final Four in the same year? Matt, work with me here. Let me look that up here real quick. My guess is it would honestly be... Okay, no, here's the thing. It was... You might... If anyone guesses this, I'll give you guys about 30 seconds to answer this. I'll tell you what my guesses would have been, okay? So, it's not UConn, which would have been one of my guesses. Obviously, UConn won last year, but the women didn't make it to the Final Four. UConn won a title in 2014... Yeah, 2011 and 2014, obviously the peak of, you know, UConn years, but that's UConn women's basketball. I mean, that's not the most recent. So we're still looking for the school that most recently sent both its men's and women's teams to the Final Four. Notre Dame hasn't had a fluke run. Okay, 51-68 says Baylor. Didn't happen in the same year. I like the guess, though. That's a really good guess. You would think maybe a North Carolina, potentially. Okay, Big Bank Hank and Nebraska ball fan both say Tennessee. Here's the thing, not so fast, my friends, in the words of Lee Corso. Tennessee men have never made a Final Four. That's why that game against Purdue was so big for that program. Purdue made a Final Four back in 1980. Not since then. Tennessee men's basketball has never made a Final Four. So despite all the success with Pat Summitt, no. Tennessee men haven't held up their end of the bargain. Maybe your mind would go to... Say Maryland, right? Brenda Fries in charge But the men haven't made it back to the Final Four, I don't believe, since Juan Dixon won it in 2002. Big Bang Hank comes through again, says Florida. Nope, women's teams weren't good enough to make it to the Final Four, at least not recently, right? Florida went back-to-back in 2007, 2008, and that's what UConn's looking to be, the first team to repeat since then. Women haven't held up their end of the bargain since then. My dad chimes in, asks if it's Duke. Same thing. The men have won a couple titles recently. The women's program dropped off a little bit there in the early 2010s, so it is not Duke. 51-68, it is not Iowa. Okay, the women made it. The men obviously have not flamed out in some pretty spectacular fashions. Big Bang Hank says Stanford, another great guess. But the men's team has been on a downslide since the early 2010s. 50-25, you have the correct answer. South Carolina. How about that? South Carolina, it's the Gamecocks. 2017. Augie says, please just let me know it's not Duke. Okay, yeah, no, it wasn't Duke, but Duke is involved in this. South Carolina made its run as, I don't remember if they were the 7 or the 10, but I know they came out of that 7-10 game in games that were supposed to be played in North Carolina, but got moved to South Carolina for political reasons that are not worth getting into here on this show right now. Duke, the 2 seed, was supposed to have the geographic advantage of playing closer to home in North Carolina. Now that South Carolina's that much further, but that arena was a South Carolina home game. Sindarius Thornwell led that men's team all the way to the Final Four in 2017 on the men's side, ultimately losing to Gonzaga, who would then end up losing to North Carolina, I believe that was, against Gonzaga in 2017. And South Carolina women beat Stanford in the Final Four, but then went on to beat Mississippi State for the national championship. So yeah, North Carolina State is doing it this year. The most recent team, South Carolina, neighbor just, you know, down the interstate to the south, the last team to do it. And that was just, what, 7-8 seasons ago? I would not have guessed South Carolina. That would not have come to mind, but
the future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When it's laid out there like that, it makes sense. Okay, so on North Carolina State, the Wolfpack open up as 9.5-point underdogs against Purdue. 9.5-point favorites are the Boilermakers in this one. Over-under at a much more reasonable or typical standard 146.5. That's still plenty of points to go around. Not sure where I lean on that line. I've been on the side of North Carolina State can't keep this up. Right? It's all going to come crashing down or even just fluttering down, you know, because I don't know how sustainable it is. It doesn't feel sustainable. DJ Burns is good. He's playing the best basketball of his life at the right time. DJ Horn, same sort of thing. Muhammad Diarra has really played a role and stepped up. Casey Morsell still hasn't shot it great, but has done well enough as a defender and knocked down the occasional open shot. So, in my head, I want to say, yeah, Purdue rolls in this one. If this was a, you know, January, February, even, you know, early March non-conference matchup, 9.5 would feel a little disrespectful to Purdue, who's really been a machine consistently all year long, unless they go play in someone else's home gym. And even that, they just lost a couple times. But my gut is telling me that, man, maybe North Carolina State does have the secret sauce. Maybe their style of play does lend itself to keeping this game closer than 10 points. DJ Burns raised a point that I don't think we've had time to talk about, but in media availability, he says he presents a different challenge for Zach Edey, not just because of his height and his size, but because he's a scoring big man. Purdue hasn't faced a lot of scoring big men. Now, does DJ Burns stretch the floor the way, say, Rink Mast does, who played a big role in Nebraska's win over Purdue? No. are NC State's guards as good on the aggregate as Northwestern's were when the Wildcats beat Purdue? No, I don't think so. But they're good enough. DJ Burns is crafty enough, knows how to create space enough. And Zach Edey is obviously a good interior defender. Would I qualify him as dominant based on my eye test? I would not. But I'm sure Purdue is better defending the rim with Zach Edey in the game than Zach Edey out of the game. So watching Zach Edey try to defend DJ Burns and how that then affects him on offense is going to be huge. Because, no, DJ Burns isn't as tall. But we know Burns has the girth, right, to combat Edey on the block, to not let him catch it on the block right at his spot, right in the restricted arc. DJ Burns has got the girth to push Zach Edey around a little bit. Not that he's a pushover, but not many people can stand up to and work through, you know, Zach Edey's lower half like DJ Burns can. He can really get into his legs, get into his chest, and actually legitimately move the big maple. So to see how North Carolina State uses DJ Burns on offense to go at Zach Edey defensively, I'm curious to see how that will translate into Zach Edey's game, especially as we get into the last 6-8 minutes of that game. Will Purdue be able to rely on Zach Edey to close against a physical presence like DJ Burns, or will he be winded? Will he be out of gas? Will his legs be tired? Will he leave shots short and leave it up to Braden Smith, who was also first team All Big Ten, but kind of fell apart down the stretch for Purdue last year? Same with Fletcher Lawyer. Was not great. They've both taken a step forward. Fletcher Lawyer with the shooting, I think, especially has ticked up. But it wouldn't shock me if NC State goes to DJ Burns early and often to try to wear Zach Edey down. And then it's going to be who on Purdue steps up. Is it Braden Smith getting downhill? Is it Trey Kaufman Wren, who's a big enough, you know, presence and body himself on the inside? Can he pick up some of the scoring slack against, maybe it's a Diarra? Who wins the matchup between Casey Morcell and Lawyer, or Casey Morcell and Mason Gillis? There's a name I was looking for. Who wins those battles? That's what it's going to come down to. Strick and I talked about this earlier in the week as well, and I think it bears repeating. March Madness, any postseason play of any sort, is about the stars, you know, performing well, stepping up to the commensurate level of their play, raising their bar. But it's also about the role players stepping up in moments maybe they haven't stepped up before. It's about the role players maybe making one extra play that they haven't made throughout the rest of the season that they make in these games. As much as this game is about Smith and Edey for Purdue, as much as this game is about Horn and Burns for North Carolina State, this game is about Trey Kaufman-Wren. This game is about Mason Gillis. This game is about Mo Diarra. It's about Casey Morcell, Ben Middlebrooks. Guys like that are going to help sway how this North Carolina State-Purdue game goes. The style differences between Alabama and UConn fascinate me. The stylistic similarities, and hopefully the last 6 or 8 minutes of Purdue and North Carolina State will hold my attention. All right, Augie, do I despise North Carolina State? I need you to rephrase this question. Do I despise North Carolina State as much as Tar Heel fans despise North Carolina State? Or do I despise North Carolina State as much as I despise North Carolina? That's the question. Let me just answer it both ways. Do I despise North Carolina State as much as I despise North Carolina? Absolutely not. I know better than that, right? I know who's chief in that argument. North Carolina State annoys me. But every time, not some of the times, but every time Duke goes to PNC Arena in Raleigh, I prepare for the worst, mentally and physically. I assume that Duke is going to lose at NC State because that game is North Carolina State's Super Bowl. No matter how good or bad Duke is, no matter how good or bad North Carolina State is, I just assume North Carolina State is going to get up for its Super Bowl, play well against Duke, maybe out-athlete them or shoot especially well, have one guy go off for 40. That's kind of what happened in the ACC tournament. Do I despise North Carolina State as much as North Carolina fans do? Probably not. I could see the looks of disgust unfolding on Hubert Davis's face and Roy Williams face in the postgame, RJ Davis and Armando Bacot, right? They felt the same pain that I felt as a Duke fan just 2 days later. I think there's still more history, earlier history, deeper rooted history between the Wolfpack and the Tar Heels than North Carolina State and Duke. So I think there's more disdain between North Carolina State and North Carolina than I do Duke and North Carolina State, right? I on this very program, I have referred to North Carolina State as the redheaded stepchild of Tobacco Road. That's how I feel about them. They're family. They're there. How often do we acknowledge them? Only when we have to, I guess, ideally. So I don't despise or hate North Carolina State. They annoy me, especially when they pop up and beat Duke, but I'm kind of resigned to it, and I kind of know what's going to happen. It's all loathing for UN Cheat or the Tar Heels, as I so often lovingly refer to them as. A little bit of coaching news in college basketball to end off today's show. The more under-the-radar news is Josh Schertz, the head coach at Indiana State, appears to be on his way to St. Louis. And yes, that is a step up. We know Indiana State's basketball history with Larry Bird. They had some good runs in the Missouri Valley, too, in the early mid-2010s. But St. Louis, a member of the Atlantic 10 tonight, Billikens, Rick Majerus, Travis Ford just left there. That's a good step up for Josh Schertz, who was in the running for some higher major jobs, but I like him going to that next level, not having quite the high level of expectations and pressure on him right away. I think that's going to work out really well for both sides. I'm excited about that for Josh Schertz. I'm also curious to see how it works out potentially for Jerome Tang and Arkansas. That's right. Eric Musselman took the job out in Los Angeles. He took the USC job. Sorry, blank me for a second there. Eric Musselman goes from Arkansas out to USC after Hunter Yurcich, the AD, put out what is now an incredibly ironic video asking, "Oh, you're still here?" With Eric Musselman a week later, he bolts. Jerome Tang, head man at Kansas State, priority candidate at Arkansas, longtime assistant under Scott Drew at Baylor. Really curious to see if he ends up accepting that job. Here's a good tweet on it from Kellis Robinette, who writes about Kansas State for the Wichita Eagle and Kansas City Star. So he says, "Sounds like the Arkansas job is Jerome Tang's if he wants it, but their fans may prefer other candidates," which is a hilarious line we don't have time to get in depth into. "I'm also told Kansas State is prepared to sweeten Tang's deal and is highly motivated to keep him in Manhattan." Kellis Robinette says, "I don't know what will happen. There's an interesting tug of war unfolding. I'm sure we'll get news over the weekend whether Jerome Tang stays in Manhattan," which I think would be a coup for Kansas State, and Glenn Taylor being able to keep both Chris Kleiman and Jerome Tang around despite interest. Arkansas is a pretty good job. I think it'd be a step up on a school level, but definitely not on a conference level. The Big 12 is still, for my money, ahead of the SEC. Really appreciate all you and your involvement here in Old School, also during On the Block. That'll do it for me here in the 93.7 The Ticket Studios. We have got some local program. We know Nuri's on the air on our streams tonight, but on the radio waves, women's basketball Final Four, starting out with NC State and South Carolina, moving into UConn and Iowa. For Strick, for Spud Webb, who joined us during On the Block, for Jay, for DP, this is Austin Norman signing off. We'll talk to you later.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with DP and Jay on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.